Hello, 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 ugly. Welcome back to my podcast, you guys. It is episode 2, 4:30 in the morning, Tuesday. I've been up since about 1, and I don't know if I'm going through a manic stage or what this is. I'm in this like new phase of trying to identify my moods, hypermania, mania, depression, whatever. So I'm feeling optimistic and enlightened, inspired, all that jazz. So I'm 99% sure this is mania. However, I have decided that I'm going to make my most valiant effort in being productive with my manic stages rather than just blah, using my energy, being goofy for no reason. Although I still do that throughout the day. But for the most part, I want to... That was gross. But I'm not re-recording this shit. Fuck that. So excuse me. It was a little burp. But I'm just trying to use my manic stages to be more productive. So, since July is the National Minority Mental Health Month, I wanted to share a fun fact. Probably every day, well, every episode this month about mental health. Particularly, probably, I'm a little more biased. Specifically the disorders that I have, but I'll also touch on other ones as well. So the National Alliance on Mental Illness estimates that around 2.6% of people in the United States have bipolar disorder, and nearly 83% of cases are severe. On average, it starts when a person is 25 years old. And I've been dealing with this shit since I was 14. So, it's insane to me that it's only 2.6% of people. So, but still, fun fact. Also, adding to that, what was that other program thing for the crazies? I'm sorry if I'm rambling. Give me like 1 second. I hope whatever you're doing right now that you are in a wonderful headspace and you are going to have a good day, good night, whatever you have going on. Oh, back to my fact. Adding to the fact about the 2.6% of people in the United States being bipolar, the Indian Journal of Psychiatry in 2015 said that women with bipolar disorder attempted suicide more often than men with the same condition, and 2 to 3 more times more often than men in the general population. So that is my little segue into what today's episode is about. I know towards the end of my last episode, I briefly touched on the fact that in an ongoing case, whatever you want to call it, with my ex-husband, in regards to him assaulting me this January. I have come to terms with the fact that bipolar people, you know, people with mental illnesses and personality disorders, whether it's depression, anxiety, whatever, tend to love so much harder than other people. And although it can be a beautiful thing, it can also be very detrimental to your mentality, your self-esteem, and your life, which is what has transpired in my own life. I got married to a fucking piece of shit. But me being the type of person that I am, because prior to my, I don't know, epiphany in accepting who I am, I felt that because I was such a quote-unquote damaged person, I used to tell people I'm damaged goods. I felt that I could give the love to other people that I wanted given to me. I don't know if everybody listening follows me on social media, but I shared to Instagram in May a little bit of my backstory about how my birth mother abandoned me when I was 4 years old on the Indian reservation that we lived on. And I personally, along with psychiatrists and therapists that I've spoken to, believe that that traumatic event happening to me at such a young age is what caused the severe codependency that comes along with bipolar. And I had a horrible, horrible habit of staying in toxic relationships with people who were just not good for me because I wanted to love them better. I wanted to show them what I wanted someone to show me. Unconditional love. No matter what. No matter what you do, what we go through, I'm here. I am your ride or die. And I, despite how much I claimed to love myself, did not love myself enough to let them go. And also in this self-actualization, self-care journey I'm on, I've come across a lot of, I've come across the same idea in multiple ways in regards to something that Jhené Aiko said in her song, I don't know if you want to call it Ways, W-A-Y-S, whatever, Why Aren't You Smiling? She says that you have got to lose your mind just to find your peace of mind. And then later on in the second verse, she says, the lyrics say, life only gets harder, but you got to get stronger. And that resonates within me, like to my core, because I recognize that people who have gone through something severely traumatic tend to be happier people with a very simple life. But there's just something about the those types of people who overcome trauma and heartbreak that is just so peaceful. And when she says you got to lose your mind just to find your peace of mind, that is essentially what happened to me with this situation with my ex-husband. Although I had been in, like I said, nothing but toxic relationships prior to him, this particular situation nearly took me the fuck out. I wanted to die. I had taken a lot of steps to ultimately ending my life. I'd gathered all the pictures that I wanted my family and my children to have. I'd written out emails and handwritten letters. I decided the way that I wanted to do it. And I was just done. There was just too much pain for me to bear any longer. I could not understand how me being such a loving person could never seem to find reciprocity. And that in itself is a weak-minded mentality to have, because it goes back to what I said the last time, last episode, about being codependent and even not necessarily relying on just a romantic relationship to validate your happiness, but also friendships. And I finally learned that the reciprocity that I have been so desperately seeking can only come from me if I want it to be unfaltering and forever. As long as I love me as much as I want someone else to, I will not get as low as I did this time. But I digress. I decided that this episode I'm going to make my second attempt at reading the statement that I'm going to have to read on the stand when I testify against him on October 7th of this year. I have not spoken a word to him since February of this year. I have not seen him, and I'm going to have to face him in court in front of a jury and read this statement about what my life is like since the night he assaulted me. And they're going nasty burp again. I'm so sorry, y'all. I'm not going to go back and re-record this. So excuse me again. All I had was ice. I don't know why I keep burping. But anyways, so I have to read this statement. And I hate to admit how much control the fear of facing him still has over me. So my plan is, and I don't know if it's just the mania telling me, like when you're manic, you feel like Superman or Superwoman, Captain Marvel, whoever the fuck, like you feel invincible and you're just like on top of the world. You want to do everything and you're going to be the best person. You're going to wake up in the morning, you're going to work out, and you're going to be productive all day and go to bed on time and eat right. And yes, we can do it. And sometimes it's just completely unrealistic. So, once again, I digress. I want to make every effort to read this statement as many times as I can until I feel confident enough to be able to look him in the eye. And I just don't want to give him any more of my tears. Like, y'all don't understand. I'm so sick of crying about this nigga. He doesn't deserve any more of me. And I have until October 7th to get over these crybaby ass tears and feel this pain. And read this fucking statement. So I'm going to read this statement. And then for the people who converse with me, and even any new listeners, if you want to message me, I'll include my handles somewhere on this when I post this podcast. But I am so open to words of encouragement and anything positive that you might have to say to me that I can try and carry with me when I do go to court and face the man who nearly fucking broke me. So, I have it all typed out, and it took me a really long time to do this. I try and have it out of sight, out of mind, in a way, which I know is bad, but I just hate seeing these papers because I know the words that are on them. Boo. Okay. So, here we go. Since the night a disagreement between my husband and I turned into a physical altercation, my life is now like what I imagine the contents of a snow globe in the hands of a child to look like once they're shaken. I sometimes feel like I'm living someone else's life, or maybe like this is just a really bad dream and I'm still waiting on somebody to come and wake me up. Jordan, aka Robert Huerta, and I were semi-recently reunited one day prior to my 31st birthday on October 20th, 2018, after he completed a one-year sentence at Travis County State Jail. Prior to his incarceration, our lives were far from perfect and obviously only got worse. I met my husband while he was working at the CEFCO corner store across the street from my job as a supervisor / dispatcher operator at Popolock in Temple, Texas in October of 2015. My previous relationship with my children's father was toxic and full of lies and infidelity. One affair even resulted in the birth of a child 9 months younger than our firstborn, which left me very wary of men and relationships. But Jordan was persistent, and over the course of 11 months, he swept me off of my feet. I fell head over heels in love with this man who was seemingly my Prince Charming. My friends and I even used to jokingly call him Aladdin because he's little and brown. That's not in my statement. I was just telling y'all. Anyways, not only did I think he was the most handsome man I'd ever dated, but he was unbelievably charming. I'll fuck that word up. Hold on, let's try this again. Not only did I think he was the most handsome man I'd ever dated, but he was unbelievably charming, romantic, amazing to and with my two children, and showered us with love and gifts in a way I'd never experienced before. I was over the moon with joy when we got married in September of 2016, 1 month shy of a year of dating. Shortly after, I learned that my new husband was living up to the Rico Suave nickname I'd given him. And he is the type of person who could sell snow to an Eskimo. So I guess I shouldn't have been surprised that weeks after our marriage, my husband decided to go on a date with a cheerleader from the local college. This discovery opened the door to the closet holding a lot, nowhere near all, of his dirty secrets. I learned that in the beginning, when he and I were dating, he actually had a girlfriend, was dating a girl at my job, and I was a third girl. He'd cheated on me with the aforementioned girlfriend about 2 months before our marriage, and then cheated again with the aforementioned girl at my job about 2 weeks before we exchanged vows. Now, a normal, quote-unquote, woman, or one with at least a tiny bit of dignity or self-esteem, would have walked away then and there. But not me, though. I wanted to love him better and show him what true love was. Unconditional and unfaltering. For better or for worse, right? Thanks to my mother whisking me away from our home in Germany with my dad and twin sisters at the young age of 4 years old in the middle of the night, and then promptly abandoning me on the reservation, I was beyond codependent, needless to say. And despite the fact that every man I'd ever dated either cheated and or abused me both mentally and emotionally, I was never the one to walk away. Ever. My bipolar / PTSD diagnosis at age 14 confirmed my twisted idea of love. I thought that as long as they don't leave the way my mom left, then they must love me, right? Right? I mean, I'd endured countless lies, affairs, different forms of abuse in the middle of the night, all throughout the day, ranging from boiling water being thrown on to me, being dragged out of bed in the middle of the night and then slapped away and yelled at and argued and then lifted off the floor by my neck and choked until my 2-year-old screams prompted the neighbors to call the police. God, this sounds like a bad Lifetime movie. I'm not gonna cry. Okay. So, yeah, I personally never ever called the police anytime I got into an argument with my significant other. And if the police were ever called by someone else, I'd never give a statement. And my goodness, I most definitely couldn't leave my husband. I was in 2 relationships before Jordan, both for 5 years apiece, and gifted both men with a son and daughter, and they never married me. But he did. Plus, I thought, who'd want a woman with 4 kids by 2 men and divorced by a third after only a month of being married? Like, who? Why? Needless to say, I stayed. But I really cannot say how much I wish I hadn't. From October to May, my husband had approximately 13 affairs that I know of. My first Thanksgiving as a married woman was spent completely alone because he was with someone else. The weekend following the holiday in December, I gave him a pass to go to a party with his friend on the day he completed parole. He thanked me that night by being unfaithful as well. As if that wasn't enough, I almost lost my 3-year-old son to Child Protective Services that same month. I received a message while at work that my baby was in their custody. After abruptly leaving work, I was informed by Child Protective Services that my child was found wandering alone near a busy street in Temple, Texas, by a neighbor driving by early in the morning. He was found wearing thin pajamas and had on no socks or shoes. The neighbor who found him waited with him for nearly 2 hours, riding around trying to return him home. But the only thing Gino, my baby, said that could be understood was, "I want mommy." They described to me how after being dropped off at work, this is why I hate feelings. I hate just letting myself be sad. The shit hurts and I'm trying to thug it out. They described how after dropping me off at work, my husband neglected to ensure that his mom's front door was locked and secured when he arrived with my children to babysit his brother. My baby was outside in the early hours of the morning, wandering around in a neighborhood he's not familiar with for an unknown amount of time in the cold near a busy street. I owe my life to the man who waited with him, because there are people in this world who would not have been so kind. When CPS arrived to take him from the police and the Good Samaritan who are waiting with him, the caseworker told me in great detail about how Gino was visibly scared, confused, and unbelievably cold. Thankfully, one of the officers bought him a pair of slippers, a blanket, and some snacks, along with a toy. She told me that her supervisor's initial recommendation was to remove my child from my custody. Looking back, I thought initially that the caseworker was just trying to be hurtful, but now I truly believe that she was just trying to get me to open my eyes and really evaluate the type of person I had committed not just my life to, but the lives of my children as well. By the grace of God, or whatever the universe had planned for me, the case was dismissed because I was at work and could not be held responsible. I was still finding out about at least one affair a month after this situation, and still, like a stupid fucking dumbass, I stayed. That doesn't say that in my statement. Once again, disclaimer, it's just how I feel. In March, his lack of loyalty became the topic of my office when a picture of my husband and some 19-year-old girl who was the friend of a coworker surfaced on social media. The domino effect of the horrible events that followed still make my stomach turn. My boss and I had a very close relationship thanks to the combination of my position as one of only three supervisors, but also the youngest and not having any family in or even near Texas. She would even jokingly call herself my mom and understandably became extremely protective and overly involved in my home life. She was constantly pushing me to leave him, especially after the picture situation surfaced. God dang, can you read? And she even created new policies preventing him from coming on the property. The twisted cocktail of a broken heart mixed in with a little humiliation day in and day out, shame, and then tension between my boss and I resulted in my resignation after a nearly four-year-long employment. Along with the whispers of my husband's infidelity, it quickly became common knowledge that he was also the local weed man. And it didn't take long for our neighbors and soon my landlord to get wind of this news, and we were served with an eviction notice in April of 2017, about a month after the loss of my job. As promised in the eviction notice, about 30 days later, we were being put out, and a seemingly simple text from my husband unexpectedly took a turn for the absolute worse. I didn't think anything of it when I read his message asking me to put his bags in our car rather than allow the people who are putting our belongings on the curb to handle them. The constable, who was monitoring the eviction process, stopped me as soon as I crossed the threshold of our soon-to-be former home, asking what the smell coming from the bags that I grabbed was. Unbeknownst to me, his two backpacks were full of marijuana, prescription pills, and other illegal things, enough to eventually result in him serving the 1 year state jail sentence he did and me 1 year misdemeanor probation. Before he finally came forward to take responsibility for his drugs I was caught with, he decided we should take the U-Haul with our whole life in it, take the kids, and run. We spent the summer of 2017 driving from Texas to Michigan to South Carolina, seeking refuge with our families. During this particular adventure, my husband decided to try and advertise himself on Craigslist in both Michigan and South Carolina as a single man new to the area seeking love. That finally pushed me to tell him that I wanted a fucking divorce. He went back to Texas while I stayed with my baby sister in South Carolina, but I knew that I had to face the pending charges against me back in Texas. When I got back, despite the complete hell this man put me through, I still believed in him. I wanted to stay true to my vows, and whether insane or blinded by love, I chose to forgive him. Even against my family's wishes and disregarding the fight we had 9 days before he was 9 days before he was to self-surrender that left me with a boxer's ear thanks to being punched in the head repeatedly. I stayed. I decided to support him for the duration of his incarceration. Ride or die, right? Ridiculous. I spent 11 months as a single mom trying to rebuild my life, maintain probation, provide for my babies, as well as my inmate. I even let him convince me that I could manage selling weed to his customers in order to have enough money for the letters that I sent daily via JPay snail mail, books, cards, gas for the drive from Temple to Austin nearly every weekend, loaded down with quarters to visit him. I spent countless dollars on collect calls and printing the hundreds of pictures I sent. I distinctly remember spending hours upon hours for almost 3 weeks tracking down, then poring over photos, meticulously putting them in chronological order to detail our love story. Dating from our first date in the winter of 2015 all the way up until the day he self-surrendered in November 2017 in a beautiful photo book. I truly believed that the time spent behind bars changed him, but I was wrong. He returned to society the exact same man, maybe even a little worse. He went right back to being promiscuous, although we weren't on the best of terms. He didn't make any attempt to show me that he knew what it was to even be faithful to the thought of having a wife. He was promiscuous in person and online, only this time he advertised himself as a sugar baby. He had his flings and he was still selling his drugs, and still, I never would have imagined in a billion years that the man who vowed to protect and cherish me could ever do what he did 90 days, just 90 days after coming home from prison. I can't say that I know what was on his mind or what the end game was when he pushed me on the floor and when he sat on my chest and choked me till I saw stars and then blackness. I try to be grateful for the fact that my babies were upstairs while all this happened, but then that terrifying, inevitable question of what if creeps in? What if they would have come downstairs? They were eating dinner. Maybe they would have wanted seconds. What if he would have held onto my throat just a few seconds longer? My babies could have come downstairs to find their mommy lifeless on the floor instead of a second helping of dinner. It has taken me a little over 3 months to finally complete this statement in regards to my life since those events occurred. I have to relive it every time I write a sentence and every time I read a word. Due to all my family being located in Virginia and South Carolina, I've had to relocate to Austin with the only friend I have in the state. This meant I had to drive from Austin to Killeen to honor the 50-50 custody order I have with my children's father. And since doing so, I now see my kids maybe once, twice a month, when I normally have never gone longer than maybe a weekend without them. The depression I slipped into was so overwhelming that it became easily noticeable to my boss and coworkers, but more importantly, customers to whom I was supposed to be convincing to use our company instead of the competitors. I struggled with sleep, which caused me to struggle severely, making the commute from Austin to Killeen multiple times a day, multiple times a week. Up before the sun to drive my babies to school in Killeen, then back to Austin to make it to work, back to Killeen to pick my babies up from school, then back home to Austin, where I'd sit up at night and cry, drown my thoughts with loud music or Netflix. And along with the tardies I racked up at work, thanks to my lack of sleep, I also started to be unable to keep the sadness out of my voice. which of course prevented me from being able to perform my job duties as required. And in March, I lost my dream job. Staying true to form, to the luck I don't have, the transmission in my car went out a week later. Although I'd experienced various forms of abuse before at the hands of the men to whom I bore children, this situation nearly broke me. My husband and I don't have any kids together. We weren't tied by a duty or obligation, however you see being a parent. Through none of that, nothing like that, he chose me. He pursued me. He promised to love me. But then he did everything in his power to destroy me. Since marrying Jordan, I've lost two jobs that I loved, my homes, all of my and my children's belongings, my right as a mother to be the primary custodial parent, but most importantly, my self-worth. I quite literally have wanted nothing more than to never wake up again. I wanted nothing more than to no longer feel the pain and fucking sadness confusing and consuming me and my life. I didn't want to rebuild yet again. Trying to heal mentally from the physical abuse I had endured while the pain of missing my children ate away at my insides, I got so low that I decided I was done and took the steps to take my own life. Thankfully, my best friend and my family helped to pull me out of that dark place and are helping to put me back together. I've had to seek therapy and still struggle day to day battling bipolar, depression, and PTSD and now anxiety. Not having a job or a car doesn't help matters either, but at least I'm still alive. I'm grateful for the changes this traumatic event has forced me to make for both me and my children. While I have no desire to remain Mrs. Robert Jordan Huerta, I do have love in my heart for him as a human being and a father to a beautiful young girl, and I hope that one day he can understand why this time I had to finally stand up and speak out. I pray that he gets the help that he needs so that he can be even better than the Prince Charming he pretended to be. Bitch, I read that shit without crying. Well, I mean, there was a few moments where I got choked up a little bit, but let me tell y'all, I feel so good right now that I got through that shit. I'm hoping and praying that it's not simply the mania. I'm going to give myself that credit and not even rob me of that. I know this episode is super long already, so I'm going to wrap it up. I'll probably post another one tonight or tomorrow. Although I do feel good for getting through that, it took a lot out of me, and I need to meditate or go do some yoga or some shit to clear my energy of that negativity. But before I go, just back to the mental health awareness thing that we've got going on for July for minorities. Anybody who's listening that is struggling with depression or anxiety or just, you know, going through a lot, I've found that what you do with your free time and what you choose to fill your head with determines a lot of how you deal with the hard shit. And rather than fill my head with what isn't, I now choose to learn and love and spend my time appreciating what is. And essentially all that is all I'm saying is I don't spend my time on social media scrolling through celebrities and even my peers' lives who the lives of people that, you know, seem to have it together. Oh, I wish that I was, you know, thinner, and I wish that I wasn't so crazy. I wish that, you know, I could have my kids every day and this and that. It goes back to like just so many there's so many little sayings and that you could rely on to remind yourself not to dwell on things you can't change. The serenity prayer. God, grant me the wisdom to accept the things I cannot change and the strength to change the things I can, or however that shit goes. In doing that, I have become a much happier person. And although I do still have my shitty days, they are a lot more bearable when I stay off social media. And if I do get on social media, it's positive. I fill my head and thoughts with loving words to me about me, because that's where I am in my journey. I will sit on Pinterest for hours while listening to Ariana Grande and her beautiful songs about loving yourself and that it's gonna be okay, and uplifting words about how it's okay to be bipolar and okay to have a mental illness and okay to be struggling. Just don't give up. Okay? Like, yeah, this was longer than it was supposed to be. I'm so sorry. If you're still listening, thank you. I love you. I appreciate it. When you listen, ugly.